I do not think.
So what are you getting at?
Yeah, I'm live.
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
Hey, we're live! Woohoo!
Turn off your radio before it's too late!
Hated it.
I told you this was a bad idea.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Anything from the week? It's still obviously a lot of Super Bowl fallout, as it should be. This will be the last official day that we really dig into plays and strategies, and I think it was worth a week of discussion, and so here's the last day of the week. So we're doing that today, but there's Bruins on the board, Celtics. Even try and get some Red Sox going, folks. Camp opens Tuesday. Tuesday, right?
Isn't that incredible?
Ridiculous. That Agenda Free Friday is brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area in Westford Wide Drive. When you can ski, ride, or tube so close to home, visit skineshoba.com. Back to your phones here as promised. Lenny in Everett on the Bees. Hi, Lenny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say it's long overdue that we have some Bruins talk, even though we were in the midst of the Patriots run here. Going 35 games with only four regulation losses in today's NHL is quite the accomplishment. I don't want them to trade anybody. I don't think they need any upgrades. And finishing first, bring it on. President's Trophy. We're not playing for second place here.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, you know, be careful who you wish to play. You know, you finish second, you got to play the Maple Leafs. And in my estimation, that's a much more dangerous opponent than playing currently the Columbus Blue Jackets, who sit in that second wildcard spot, or the New York Islanders. But I think this team has as good a chance as anyone to win the Stanley Cup. It's going to come down to health and luck. And they got to go for the first seed. And to be honest, I don't think they're even thinking about it. It's one game at a time, and they're doing a great job.
Okay, Lenny, I got you know, slow your black and gold roll over there. You can put your pants back on now. That's okay. Bruins fans should be excited. They've been playing great. But you've got to separate. You know, are they peaking too early? Yes! Like, I love how people get sensitive to that question. Are they peaking too early? Yes, of course they're peaking too early. If they were playing like this in April, then we're in business. You think they're going to... They've won four out of the last five games for two straight months. You think they're going to win four out of five in the postseason?
Oh, no, it's more than that. They've won more than four out of five for 2 months.
Okay, so whatever it is, whatever that percentage is, they're not going to be winning like that in April. They're not going to be playing. So they are. They're peaking now, and that sucks. It's too bad they can't peak in April. There's nothing you can do about it. It's beyond your control. But I think it's a categorical fact that they're peaking.
Well, they can't play any better than they're playing. I mean, so, like, I look at it this way. Like, honestly, long-term for me.
Tim Schaller, what he did the other night to the Rangers and Hank Lundqvist, I'm sorry. That's not who he is.
Oh, the other thing, too, is everything right now is going their way, and I'm not taking any...
Everything.
How about Bergeron flipping that puck from the blue line the other night that went through Lundqvist?
So I was just going to say, Lundqvist couldn't stop a beach ball that night. So what, you think you're going to get goaltending like that in the playoffs against you?
No. See, so long-term, my opinion on them hasn't changed in that what would be a good year for the Bruins to me, because the regular season feels like it's already exceeded it.
Win around
and push a little in the second.
Win around.
Yeah, go two rounds. Stick around for two. Anything after that is absolute gravy. If they get to the conference final, huge win.
And give me second. Give me second place all day long. And you're right not to pick and choose the opponent. I'm not doing it for that reason. I'm just doing it because I don't want that President's Trophy.
They have the fewest regulation losses in the league. They've lost 11 games in regulation all year. 11!
Phil and Malden on Jimmy Garoppolo. Go, Phil.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. Based on the contracts, this guy played five games and get $1.37.5 million, and Brady's the MVP. And I don't know if you saw the article in the Herald this morning.
I did. Yeah, Brady, it was a great story.
Yeah, Brady wants him to open up show me the money, open up the wallet. And I think that something's wrong here. I mean, I think they should have kept Garoppolo, but. That's a hoss of a different color.
Phil, let me ask something. So you get the newspaper, you don't go on the internet, right?
Yeah, I go on the internet.
Okay. Go on the internet and follow up on that story in the Herald by Ron Borges today. You might find something about that story. But I love the guy. That's old school. You get the newspaper, it's in print, man. That's it. That's the story. Show me the money, man.
See, old school, you'd have gotten 24 hours out of it.
That's awesome. You get 24 hours of it before it gets debunked. You get actual, like, there it is. Boom. Suck on that, Globe. I got a story.
I know I'm in the minority here. I feel for Borgie on this one. I do. I feel for him. I know he screwed up. There's no two ways he screwed up. Of course he screwed up. No kidding. Thank you. Couldn't figure that out on my own. Thanks. But you know what? I've been on that side of it. And I'm not saying that precisely has happened to me, but you're always at the mercy of the people who tell you stuff, let alone somebody who clearly doesn't have enough to do to invest the time and energy to try to snook a reporter so that, what, he loses his job? I'm supposed to feel good about that?
Oh, the shame is it was such a good story, too. I enjoyed it. I read it twice. I got highlighted portions, circled portions. We're doing a whole segment on it. I don't care if it's fake.
People suck.
Well, you are, again, a one-source guy. You've gone on the record.
Yeah. It's a good story. There's some worthwhile stuff in here. If it's true, it's not true. Okay, it's not true. I still want to do this segment. The thing about Garoppolo, I think it's a mistake what they're doing out there. As we're talking here, they just had the Jimmy Garoppolo press conference. And I think, have the Patriots, since Belichick really got going, have they ever had a press conference to announce and talk about a contract extension?
No, but they've won.
They don't even send out a release. It's like, don't. You know, the last time they did it was Bledsoe. Re-signed a big deal, I think in 2001 or 2000 or 01. Belichick had just gotten here. Clearly, Belichick has no say over the quarterbacks because Robert's in charge of the quarterbacks and Bill gets everybody else. I think we've come to learn that. But Robert gives Bledsoe this huge deal and they did a press conference for it. And I can even half remember Bill wanting to swallow his tie. Like, why are we doing a press conference to announce that the player's going to make a lot of money? Like, that's just a jinx, and everybody does it, but I like the fact that the Patriots don't.
Well, they don't anymore, but why? Because they don't have to sell their fans hope.
But I don't think Bill would ever want to do it. He didn't want to do it with Bledsoe, that's for sure. That was an ownership thing, again. So, I just think it's bad karma. Like, paying him that much to begin with is like, oof. It's like winning the President's Trophy. Like, now you're the highest-paid player in the game. You know, that works. You know, that the guy who becomes the highest-paid player in the game usually goes right in the crater or gets hurt. And then the press conference to announce all the money that he's making? I don't know. I just think that's bad juju.
I think they're just trying to build excitement there. They haven't been able to really bang out that stadium.
Of course they're doing that, but is it what's good for the football team?
I don't. Karmically, I don't think it's anything bad.
I do.
I don't mind it. I mean, again.
Because you love the guy.
Well, but they've sucked. They've sucked. Like, what are they supposed to do? Not tell their fans that they just signed Garoppolo?
I think they've said nothing. Do nothing.
No, they can't. They haven't even filled that stadium since they built the damn
place.
No,
they got to celebrate it.
Two-sentence press release. Jimmy Garoppolo has been extended by the San Francisco 49ers.
No, that's what you do when you release him.
Yeah.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub. No one says it like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what, are you nuts?
Felger and Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Near corner to Brusk. High slot, Chara with room. Wrister, he scores! Zdeno Chara took his time, picked his spot, and snapped it inside the far post. The captain with the go-ahead goal. Bruins lead the Rangers 2-1.
You're on Agenda Free Friday. Chara, basically, calling their old breakout under Claude Julien a dinosaur.
Dinosaur age.
Lack of a better term. Just quite a shot at his former coach. He didn't mean it that way, but...
No, he was actually quoting Cassidy, right? In other words, Cassidy, he said,
right.
Cassidy calls them dinosaur age, and then Chara continued and said, and he's right. Right? So, but that in and of itself tells you, A, how Cassidy looked at it, and B, that the players are now agreeing tells you, oh yeah, that didn't work.
That's a huge difference. And just the layman like me, you know, you can just tell how they came out of their own zone, that reverse behind the net. Like, how many times did you see that off the back wall? You know, just like, oh God, insufferable. D to D behind the net. Like, go, go, go. Everybody's going. Go, go. Turn up ice. Go. And so they've eliminated that whole thing, and it's made... Yeah, one of those things that's made a huge difference. It was, you know, part of a story, Fluto, I think, wrote it on Zdeno Chara having a really great year at age 40. And he's attributing... Excuse me. What?
You are such a dink.
What?
You are such a dink.
I have something in my throat.
He's going plant-based now.
Right. So all of a sudden at age 40, he's eating quinoa bowls.
Quinoa.
And berries.
He's having the farro salad.
Excuse me. He's having the farro salad, and he's found the fountain of youth, which
you need a water over there,
which is great. I do. I need to hold on. Let me pop my seltzer. So, to which I say, great. Like, Well, how can the Patriots have the only guy at 40 who looks amazing? Like, can we spread the wealth? You get Chara doing whatever Brady's doing, or Ortiz, or what, you know, like, oh, no, I said, because Ortiz did it too. And this is when the last couple of years, Chara had sort of really backslid. So I've always felt like, why can't Ortiz and Brady share with Chara whatever they're doing, whatever's going on there? And, you know, can we get Chara to play like these other 40-year-olds? And Chara's having a really good year, but there is a distinction. There is a distinction. I would not compare Chara to Brady and Ortiz, because Brady's still the best player in his game, in his sport. He's still the best. Chara has just sort of stopped the decline. He sort of leveled off. You know, he was a Norris candidate 5 years ago. Now he's a top 20 defenseman versus a top 10, you know. But
and even Ortiz was the best hitter in the game last year.
And Ortiz was still hitting, you know, 40 bombs his last year at 40. So, you know, you're still not, from Chara, you're still not getting that. You're still not getting Brady and Ortiz. But whatever the hell it is he's doing, I don't care. Now the question is, he's up for a contract, and how much do you extend to keep him going? That's a scary one, because that, you know, that's a different sport.
I mean, I'd go year to year.
Absolutely.
I would, but he's going to want to. And, you know, to me, if you want to do that, the second year has got to be less.
So, two times four, no problem. I'd do that in a heartbeat. You know, that's a bar. I think, you know, he's playing at a much higher level than that. But, you know, at 40 and his age and it's like his size, you got to be real careful with that, man. I mean, he'll probably get more than that.
I would say, like, you know, structure it in a way that you want to give him $5 million next year? Fine. Give him $5 million for the 1 year, and then the second year is lower, so that if you have to buy it out, see you later. Right? Then there's not as much of a hit.
I'm not sure if you can do that anymore in the league. But anyway, so that's just one of the things we've been talking about. Back to your phones. Here's Keith at UMass on Malcolm Butler. Go ahead, Kevin. I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead.
Yeah, so do you see the USA Today for the win article on possibly why Belichick sat Butler?
I did not.
Basically said that he wanted to entice Philly to throw it because he feared the running game even more, like more in the second half. And he did that with the Giants, but opposite. He told defense to let some running back gain 100 yards to keep him from passing a lot. Do you think there's a chance this is true, or is it more likely Malcolm was smoking dope with some fine biddies in his hotel room?
I don't think he was smoking dope with fine biddies in his hotel room. I don't think that's what happened. And I think that sounds cockamamie, to put worse players on the field so you'll get torched in the passing game. Like, that's the worst strategy I've ever heard. Either way, if that was a strategy, which it wasn't, by the third quarter, and you can't stop a nosebleed, don't you think it was time to adjust?
Yes.
They never did.
No, and that is really, that's the most stunning thing of all. Like, really, the fact that at some point they didn't look at it and say, we have to change and got to put him in. They just, Bill dug in his heels. He got stubborn with it at that point.
James in the car on the Celtics here on Agenda Free Friday. Hi, James.
Hey, guys. You guys were talking a while ago about Brad Stevens and trading him hypothetically for like an Anthony Davis or a first-round pick. Wondering if after all the trades yesterday and seeing how bad former Celtics are, if you'd still do it. Thanks.
So if,
yep.
If the Pelicans asked for Brad Stevens as part of the package to get Anthony Davis, would you do it?
Of course.
I love it.
No.
This makes Celtics fans so upset.
You can't be serious.
No, and I have my thing with Anthony Davis anyway. I think he's an injury waiting to happen.
Okay,
like,
Carl
just
Anthony Towns, insert the player.
Whatever. No, I'm not trading Brad Stevens. Enough with this. I'm not doing it.
For
no.
Any player in the league? Well, you're an idiot.
Well, oh, fine. Then I'll be an idiot then. Fine. I'll be an idiot. I'm going with Stevens.
You're used to that anyway.
Yes.
How many teams have all this talent and they have no program or direction? What are we doing here? We have a positive that doesn't count against a cap or anything like that, and you want to just move them?
For Kevin Durant.
No. I want the coach. I want the program.
If a guy's that good that he can help, he can turn a hack like Jay Crowder.
I know
that
he hasn't won a championship yet, but he's one of the top three coaches in the league, maybe
sure,
two.
Sure is. I'll give you number one. If you want number one, he's the best coach in the league.
Thank you.
I won't argue with that. The best coach in the league lost to Tyronn Lue last year because he didn't have the player. So I don't know how you would ever take the
you
coach over
both,
the player.
You need both, Mike. You need balance.
You don't. Yeah. No, you don't need both because Tyronn Lue won a championship. So
Eric Spoelstra won two.
If you have the player, then really the coach does not matter in that league. Unfortunately, I wish it was different. But it's not. I mean, that's just the way it is.
I'm still not trading him, though, and I think anybody who wants to trade him for a pick or a player is just stupid.
Okay, well, then I'm stupid, I guess.
You are. That's obvious.
You're angry. You're clearly angry today, Jimmy. Here's what I would do.
I'd blame the a-hole caller for bringing up something from like 4 months ago.
I would borrow my son's little mountain bike. I would get it and put a helmet on, and I would put an extra seat on the back. I would put Stevens on that seat on the back, and I would bike him to New Orleans for Anthony Davis in a second. And if it's Karl-Anthony Towns, I will carry him on my back there to get him.
I also also may or may not be lobbying for my Paul Pierce tickets on Sunday, which I do not have.
Mark in Hopedale, what do you got, Mark, on the Bruins?
Hey, guys. So I've seen a lot of similarities to this year's team, to the 2011 team, and I just want to say first that I'm not, like, I'm pretty negative about this team normally. Like, I'm pretty hard on them normally. But if you look at the plus-minus in the NHL just as a whole right now, Chara, Bergeron, and Marchand are all swimming around the top five constantly, which is a very, very similar to 2011. We had a bunch of players in the top 10 then. McAvoy's also climbing up the ladder in that case as well. We also have a power play that looks really, really good all the time and a penalty kill. So I think special teams are really important in the playoffs. I think we have a lot of veteran leadership, and if the kids can play in the playoffs, I think we have a really, really good chance.
Okay, so let me tell you what I think where you are, you know, cup caliber. I think your depth, and in that sport, it does come into play. Your depth is great. Your third and fourth lines this year are different than they were in 11. The fourth line this year is young, but really effective. That's a great, I love their fourth line. Great crash line. Achari's been out, but when he's back, like that, they throw their weight around. They usually win the possession battle. They're usually in the other corner. They don't score, but they change sort of momentum in the game like a fourth line should. Your third line for portions of the year has been your best line with Heinen,
Nash,
and Backes. Okay, that's been terrific. And your front-end players have been awesome.
Off the charts.
Okay, Bergeron, Marchand, Chara, Pasternak, they've been awesome. So you have the high end, you have the depth.
Right.
Okay, here are the two things from 11 that I don't know if you have. The goaltending. Can Tuukka Rask do what Tim Thomas did? And I don't know if Tim Thomas had to be that good, but can Rask legitimately steal you games and carry you and steal you series? He really hasn't done that in his career. So can he legitimately be that guy? And then I was just starting to write the depth of your D.
I was going
to
say, you don't have the shutdown pair at the top. Not quite.
So Chara, Seidenberg, Ferentz. Who is Ferentz's partner? Why am I blanking on this?
Boychuk?
Ferentz, Boychuk sounds right. And then McQuaid. Just trying to think who they're...
Wasn't it, what's his name? The puck mover.
The third D pair, was it John Michael Lyles?
No. The puck mover trade.
Not John Michael Lyles, but before him. Oh, he sucked. Cabrera.
Thomas Cabrera.
He blew chunks. But he was out there. He was a veteran guy. I don't know. So, you know, McAvoy, Char, you should feel good about that. Carlo Krug.
No. They're not as good.
I would say your depth on D is not what it was. It's not... I don't know if it's championship caliber. It doesn't feel like it is.
See, I liken them more to like 08, 09. I think they're in that era. Do you realize that? You know, they had that series against Montreal. They took it to 7 in 07, 08, right?
They woke up hockey in this town.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. They were fabulous, and there was a great little run, even though they lost in Game 7. The next year, I think they won the President's Trophy.
They were right there. They had a good year.
And then they won one round. They swept the Canadiens, who sucked, and then they lost to Carolina.
That's right.
Which is when they sort of scouted and recognized Seidenberg, and then all of a sudden a year later he was there.
That's where they are.
To me, that's what it feels like, that they are there. They still feel a year or two away from real cup contention.
I agree. Tyler in Rhode Island on the Celtics. Hi, Tyler.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good. What do you got?
So I just want to talk a little bit about Marcus Morris. First of all, why do we have him if he's always injury prone? I mean, the guy hasn't even played up to 5 games this year. And my question is, we should get rid of him and maybe get rid of Thesis for a big man that we can use. Yes, we just got Monroe and he's great.
Well, okay, I mean, so hold on, Tyler. Big Jim Murray's exasperated. Go ahead.
Daniel Tice. Tice. I'm not going to take... I'm sorry. It's your show.
No.
I'm not going to take any Celtics call seriously if you don't know the names of the effing players. Thesis? I'm going to write a thesis. Instead, I'm going to write a Daniel Tice tonight. Tice, not Thesis. And Marcus Morris is probably your best scorer off the effing bench.
I don't know if we should ostracize people for getting names wrong.
I took on the German kid with the t-shirt. Call him whatever you want.
Tice, baby.
I know who you're talking about.
I mean, I've been calling Kyle Vannoy Jonathan for about 3 years. Line?
just watching last night, and I like Monroe, Greg Monroe.
Greg Monroe, yes.
I like him because I think he's a little bit of a throwback. Like, he reminds me when he was with the Bucks. Like, there's Bob Lanier. Like, he actually puts his butt on the block. You can dump the ball down to him. He makes a low post move and scores 2, not 3, and then goes down the floor. Like, it's almost refreshing for me to watch Monroe play because he's such a throwback. No one plays like that anymore. But watching him and Morris... I see what Jimmy's saying about Monroe. What a slow, plodding oaf.
He runs like me.
Morris. Marquise? Which one do we have?
Marquise. We have Marcus.
Marcus Morris looks like Kyrie Irving next to Greg Monroe. Monroe is such a plodding oaf. Like, no wonder they don't play that way anymore. It's amazing he survives in the league. He's going half speed compared to everybody else.
I'll tell you what, he did make one absolutely great pass last night.
He is a great low post scorer and passer. He's fun to watch when he's going down there.
I think actually, I think he's going to help him. I do. I think he's going to help him. That second unit is just so barren that to have a guy there that can actually score will help.
Let's go to Carlton in Tampa. Is this the real Carlton in Tampa? Because there's, you know,
there's a lot of catfishing going on.
There's a lot of fakery going on here. Is this the real Carlton?
Murray sounded so depressed, I wanted to try to cheer Catboy up.
Yeah, good luck.
Hey, Catboy.
Yeah.
Your vindictive tool bag of a coach tried to humiliate Malcolm Butler in front of 100 million fans on Super Bowl night.
More.
And then he proceeded to have his Boston media sock puppets smear him throughout the Boston press, but it led to Bill being constructively fired by Robert Kraft on Tuesday, which is why your weasel new coach, Josh McDaniels, did a 180-degree turn. And I'd like you to contrast what Ron Borges did last night with the 98.5 Sports Hub talking all week about late meetings, poor practices, breaking curfew, late-night concerts, altercation with coaches, and weed use by Malcolm Butler without checking one damn thing about any of it. Could you please explain that to me?
Good job, Carlton. Good point. Good point. Patriot Toadies has no problem running with fake made-up stories about Malcolm Butler to make Belichick look better. No problem whatsoever. Excellent point, Carlton.
I'm back. I'm back after months. It's been since that Jets game, the Austin Seferian Jenkins game, where you wouldn't say that it should have been a touchdown, and you were lying to your listeners. But I'm back. I could only stay away for so long.
Of all the reasons to be boycotted, because he disagreed on a call, an official's call. I've never been boycotted for something like that.
It's amazing how Carlton can look back his resentment to us after the Patriots lose the Super Bowl.
But constructively fired? I think he meant effectively fired. But that's an interesting point. Or interesting way to look at it. By bending over backwards and, you know, that last-ditch effort to get McDaniels, did they effectively end Belichick's tenure?
I mean, I think part of the reason they might have acted so aggressively now is on the chance that, you know, they're not happy with the way he's acting next year and they have to fire him in midseason.
Okay, that's not going to happen. So fire is just the wrong word.
Dismiss.
Do you think they would ever, in a million years, dismiss Bill Belichick?
No, I think never, they would agree to part ways.
Never, ever, ever.
Demote.
No,
snipped him.
No. Never. You think that's a legit possibility?
I doubt it.
Murray? Mm. No. 0.0.
Didn't they kind of already do that with the Garoppolo move?
0.0.
What if they feel like next year he's not giving them an honest effort? In the middle of the season, then what do they do?
They don't fire him.
What do?
They let him go until he walks away.
Hmm.
There's no way. There's no way on that one, fellas.
Felger and Maz.
This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Maz.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, guys. So, from a tactical standpoint, you know, we talk about how the Pats didn't make adjustments. If they put Butler in the game, you know, I think he's better going vertical at the corner than Gilmore. And obviously, McCourty was running in circles all night on Ertz. So maybe if they actually played Butler, they could have had Gilmore on Ertz and then, you know, Butler following Jeffrey with safety help over the top, like how they do when they play Antonio Brown. And one quick Isaiah thing. How much money do you guys think he's costing himself with all his comments and being traded twice? Thanks, guys.
So it's not the comments. It's the sucking and the health and the lack of a step and all of that. Yes, he's... I don't think his attitude has cost him a thing. Attitude doesn't cost you anything in that league. It's about your talent.
As long as you play well.
Yeah. Right. He's not healthy. He's not playing well. He doesn't look like the same guy. That's going to kill him. Not the fact that he chirps or wants a video played or not played. Like, that has nothing to do with it. Zero. 0.0. Comes with the territory in that league. The first thing, he's right about the domino effect of Butler. It's not just Butler not being out there to make a play. It's Jordan Richards on Zach Ertz. That's the domino effect of having to put Chung in the slot and then Bademosi on this guy and then et cetera, et cetera. That's what happened in the game. That's the biggest part of Butler.
I mean, regardless of who ends up on who, I want Butler on the field over Richards, Bademosi, and who am I leaving out?
Well, Rowe.
Rowe. You know, and look, maybe Rowe's out there by necessity because you got to play three corners.
To me, if you want to tell me that Rowe has been Butler's equal this year, I'll give you that. Butler didn't have a good year.
It's the next two guys.
Richards should not have been on the field in the Super Bowl.
It's the next two guys.
It's Bademosi and Richards. It's those two. And remember, because they took Butler out, they ended up playing Chung in the slot, which forces another safety onto the field. Now you get Richards out there. It's the trickle effect. It's the ripple. Like, the whole thing is like, how can you possibly say that Bademosi and Richards are a better option than Malcolm Butler? That's really what it comes down to.
They're obviously not. Craig in Stockbridge. Hi, Craig. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm just going to say that back they forgot Boychuk and, Boychuk, but also Sean Thornton. He won the game.
Craig, I love Sean Thornton as much as anyone. He won you squat. What do you mean he won the game?
No, he was a game changer in the rest of the series.
Kind of. He was in the finals because Vancouver were a bunch of Sallies. So all Sean had to do was step onto the ice and start chirping Luongo and start chirping those guys. And because Vancouver was so soft that Thornton got to him. So I don't want to diminish Sean and say he did nothing. But his comment line says the Bruins need an enforcer. They do not need an enforcer. It's not the league.
Not anymore. No. Not anymore. I mean, that's not how they do it anymore. They need someone who can fortify that second line.
Here's what I wonder. Here's what happens. Well, but that's along the enforcer line. In the playoffs, you know, every time the puck is frozen in front of the net, it's a scrap. It's like guys are leaning on each other and hacking and whacking and face washing, and like every whistle, every stop is some sort of scrum. And you got to sort of stand up in those situations and all of that. I think it does ramp up physically. Do the Bruins have enough of those guys?
I don't know. I think McAvoy can do that. I'm not worried about him, and I think McQuaid can do that.
McQuaid obviously can.
And Char can do it. Of course he can do it.
Carlo is the size to do it, but again, he's still a kid.
Kevin Miller can do it. So, I mean, I'm just asking this question. I'm just going through. They might have it on D. They might have enough sturdiness on D.
I mean, I think they have the size. And again, McAvoy to me is the mentality. McAvoy's just...
Oh, he wants it. He wants to stick his nose
in. He's a different animal. Like, you know, I leave him out of it. The other guys, I just think there might be an experience thing there that they're not ready for. McQuaid's got the experience, but the other ones, I don't know. Not in that situation, I mean.
We've got Adam and... So, look, we hear from Bob and Easton yesterday. Okay. So, of course, you hear from his evil twin brother, Adam and Brockton. Bob and Easton is the homer, the home piece, and Adam is more along our lines. What do you got for us today, Adam?
So let me get this straight, okay? My brother Bobby can remember the exact date of when you said something that a lot of people thought, actually, which was Andrew Luck is going to be a Hall of Famer, but yet he can't remember the date of his own brother's birthday. I know I don't get a call on that date, that's for sure. And don't let Bobby fool you. The last time he watched basketball is when I was 8 years old dunking on our indoor Nerf hoop, okay? And Felger, don't chalk up the Tebow thing as a huge blunder, because last year the Rams had three quarterbacks on their roster. Jared Goff, some said the biggest bust, Case Keenum, a backup journeyman, and Nick Foles, who contemplated retiring. What happened? All three ended up with a new coach. Goff had a breakout year, Keenan had a career year, and Foles just won the Super Bowl. If Tebow had the right coach, he could have had a career in the NFL. And the only thing that Bobby knows about Coach is that he sits it when he flies to Disneyland. And one last thing, because this has been eating at me since the holidays, Felga. Bobby, you coming on the air and saying that the Red Sox had a better season than the Yankees last year is the dumbest thing you have ever said, and that includes when you used to regurgitate Pete Shepard hot take.
Okay, thanks, Adam. Bobby, your turn. So if Tebow had the right coach, he could have been a good NFL quarterback?
No.
Come on.
Please. No, you're going to have to put that one in your pipe and smoke it forever. But Tebow sucks. He can't throw. He never could.
Okay, the Ron Borges story, unfortunately, was not a real story. But Greg Bedard wrote one today in the Boston Sports Journal that was tremendous.
It was good.
I do want to get into. Beyond Butler, some really questionable coaching stuff with the Patriots. We'll do that right after this in our long commercial-free segment.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a hypocrite.
Wow.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Clement in motion to the right. Foles throwing for Ertz down the middle. McCourty fell down. Ertz into the end zone. Touchdown, Philadelphia. And the Eagles have gone back in front.
It's a Gronk play. It's what New England does. They did it in Pittsburgh. You split everybody out right. Overload. And man, it's just a great route. Oh. Hold on, boys. Ball popped out.
Ertz extending the football.
But it's different. He's a runner there.
In Boston Sports Journal, Greg Bedard wrote a great story talking about coaching decisions, basically on defense in this game, beyond Butler, that were just head-scratching and lost him the game. Here's one example. He says, not calling a timeout before that Ertz touchdown. Not calling a timeout. He says, the Patriots had one timeout remaining when the Eagles came to the line with 2:25 remaining and facing a 3rd-and-7. It was at the New England 11. A stop would mean the Patriots would need only a field goal to win the game. After breaking the huddle, all hell broke loose on the New England side of the ball when running back Corey Clement went in motion to the right. Instead of a player like Marcus Flowers going with Clement, it was Daron Harmon who ran with Clement. The play called for the Patriots' best pass rusher, Trey Flowers, to drop into coverage, while Marquise Flowers rushed the passer. After the snap, the Patriots had five players covering four Eagles receivers, and Stephon Gilmore and Harmon ran into each other for good measure. Trey Flowers should have been rushing the passer, with Marquise Flowers covering Clement. That would have allowed Harmon to remain in the middle of the field and essentially double Ertz with McCourty. That did not happen. McCourty was left all by himself on two-thirds of the field and predictably got exposed by Ertz. He said the Patriots were completely out of sorts on the most important play of the game. A timeout should have been taken. So this is like, you know, we bend over backwards and fill the air with the stink of our farts when they get one right, like in the Seattle Super Bowl, where they're ready for that Seattle play. Well, now here they are, just on the other side of the ball, and they're running around with their, like a chicken with their head cut off.
I'm just watching the play right now, and again, as Clement goes in motion, Harmon runs to that side of the field, and McCourty's one-on-one against Ertz on the left side, and he gets smoked. And I'll tell you, I said this to someone, and the more, you know, I think we talked about it off the air the other day. In that Minnesota game, when Philly beat Minnesota in the NFC Championship, right? That run-pass option thing was handoffs and slants. Slant, 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 slant. Thrown to the inside of the field. So Collinsworth said this during the game, and forgive me if we already talked about this on the air, but Collinsworth talked about it during the game, and he said the Patriots' defensive backs were in playing with inside leverage to force everything to the outside. And Philly beat him over and over and over again outside the numbers. And you know what that tells me? They were waiting for it. They were ready for it. Foles was practicing the throws all week, over and over and over again, throwing outside the numbers to the sidelines. They were ready. They were more prepared. They were ready for what the Patriots were going to do, and they hit them.
And what were the Patriots doing with some of their players? The most damning thing in this story from Greg Bedard is the use of Marquise Flowers. Okay? Marquise Flowers was this Bengals special teamer that they brought over in the middle of the year. Again, to cover punts, because they love their special teams guys, even though the kicking game has never been less important in the league. But Greg writes that as the regular season advanced, Marquise, now this isn't Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers is that really good pass rushing defensive line. This is Marquise Flowers, the special teams linebacker. They say, he writes that as the season advanced, Marquise became an important role player for the defense. Using the speed that made him such a valuable contributor on special teams, the Patriots put him to use, spying athletic quarterbacks, covering running backs out of the backfield, and occasionally rushing the passer on blitzes. But his primary role was as a cover guy, covering running backs and spying quarterbacks. So Greg writes that in facing the Eagles, you figured that Flowers would be an essential part of the third down package, at least covering running backs. Well, Flowers was indeed in the Patriots' third down or long yardage package, playing in 17 plays. His role, however, was a major head-scratcher. Basically, they rushed him most of the game. Flowers, who was 6'3", and 250 pounds, was used to rush the passer against the Eagles' much larger offensive line, all of whom outweighed him by at least 50 pounds, 9 times. And he spied Foles, I guess, says Bedard, because he couldn't tell really what he was doing because he was just sort of standing there. He was used to rush the passer 9 times, or spy Foles, I guess, on another 2. So he wasn't used in coverage. And again, on that Ertz touchdown, as I just explained to you, they had Marquise Flowers rushing the passer and Trey Flowers in coverage, when it should be just the opposite. Trey Flowers should be rushing, Marquise should be in coverage. And so Greg charted the 17 plays that Marquise Flowers was on the field. Listen to this. In the 17 plays Marquise Flowers was on the field, the Patriots gave up 214 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the Eagles converted on had first downs on 17 of the 11 snaps, meaning gained first downs, either third down conversions or second down. They had first downs on 11 of the 17 snaps, scored two touchdowns and gained 214 yards just when Marquise Flowers was on the field. He made one tackle. He had one tackle.
And that was, again, that was that little in-and-out play that he threw Aguilar for an eight-yard loss. Remember that?
Yes, and that's, he points that one out. And on one of the few times that Flowers actually did cover the running back, which is what he's supposed to do, he was beaten for a touchdown by Corey Kmet for a 22-yard score when safety Devin McCourty was likely even more at fault, writes Greg. He says, how that or any other of Marquise Flowers' 17 plays made any sense in planning was a crucial mistake by defensive coordinator Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick. It's interesting. Interesting. Marquise Flowers. So they're running, their linebackers, Maz, were exposed, but also how they use these guys.
Yeah, well, so that, and to me, that part of it is coaching. Now, look, ultimately, I will say, okay, if you're relying on Marquise Flowers, well, that's your problem in the first place. Like, to me, I have felt it all year long. Their linebacking corps sucked. Awful. I mean, once Hightower went down, they were porked. They had nobody there. But, look, that's the kind of stuff Bedard would see that I wouldn't. And so the numbers are staggering when you add them up.
Oh, my God. Those Marquise Flowers numbers. He's on the field for 17 snaps. They gained 214 yards in those, just on those 17 snaps.
So you know what that means? You're playing with 10 guys.
That's what he writes. He says when Marquise Flowers was on the field, they were basically playing with 10. Here's another example, not matching personnel correctly. Greg writes that, how many times have we seen it? The Patriots know their opponent like the back of their hand, and they have perfect counters to each of the opponent's personnel packages. Well, the Patriots got exposed big time on two of the Eagles' longest plays when they decided to match heavy Eagles' personnel groupings with their very light dime, meaning six defensive back, package. On LeGarrette Blount's 36-yard run, which was the second longest play of the game, the Eagles came out with six offensive linemen plus a tight end, and the Patriots decided to answer with six defensive backs? As Greg says, and you wonder why the Patriots were largely defenseless as the larger Eagles pushed them around? He says then on the Eagles' first third down of the second half, the Eagles produced a 26-yard run, which was their fourth longest play, with 11 personnel, Maz, one back, one tight end, three receivers. Not only were the Patriots in dime, they only put two defensive linemen on the field with three linebackers, including Marquise Flowers. It's no wonder Jay Ajayi easily ran for such a big gain. Greg says that this wasn't about the Patriots playing porous run defense. This was about them not even being in a fair fight as far as personnel goes. Those two plays accounted for 38% of the Eagles' running game.
Unreal.
And it was on coaching. Again, you're in these light fronts against these heavy fronts and you get gashed. That's largely about the players on the field at the time. That's on the coaching.
I mean, so again, this comes back to Peterson being prepared, getting favorable matchups. And look, the Patricia thing, I don't know how it's going to go in Detroit. Okay, but to me, I feel like that's a disaster waiting to happen. They got spanked in this game. There were a lot of weapons on that Philly side, and they were not ready for what Philly threw at them.
So, and Greg has a few more examples. I mentioned the special teams one earlier, where Patriots have all these special teams players. And so this is partly why Bademosi has to play and Flowers has to play, because there's not enough roster spots to have special teams only players and defense, so they have to cross over and play D. And it killed you, especially when there were only eight kicks in the entire game, seven kickoffs that were returned, and one punt. So you have this slew of special teams, Matt Slater, Bademosi, Brandon King, Jordan Richards, Brandon Bolden, Nicholas Grigsby, who I still don't know, I've never heard of, Geno Grissom, and Rex Burkhead for what amounted to eight kicks, eight kicking plays, seven kickoff returns or kicks, and one punt return.
In a game that basically had 150 plays.
So it's roster construction, coaching decision, personnel groupings. So, you know, Greg goes into the whole thing beyond the Butler stuff, which he didn't even get to, which still is number one on the list, the most glaring thing that Bill screwed up in that game. So it's a good read, and it's actually legit, not a fake story. So it's worth your read on that one.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.